The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome to Sports Talk 1240, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Anthony Beers, with a great show lined up for you tonight. WFAN anchor Peter Schwartz will be joining us later in the program, as well as my colleague Tyreek Butler. But first, we got to start with some NFL. I myself was at the Giants game today, and it was another painful loss for the G-men. The Atlanta Falcons defeated the Giants 24-20. The Giants were up 10 in the fourth quarter and surrendered 14 unanswered points to the Atlanta Falcons. It's a consecutively difficult loss. Difficult loss for the Giants. Another game that they definitely could have won. And a lot of people are looking at the semantics of the game. They had this play, they had this one, they had that. And I just got to say something. It's 2 weeks in a row now, and I can't help but notice that in the Cowboys game the week before, everyone's frustrated for two huge complaints. Obviously the clock management, but two huge play calling mistakes. They didn't run the ball on third and goal, they needed a yard to get in the end zone, and they elected to pass. And what do they do today on third and short when the Giants are driving? You know, they need some points, they just need a yard. They ran the ball and got stuffed. And what was the other thing people complained about last week against the Dallas Cowboys? On the final drive, Cowboys are picking apart the Giants. Everyone's backing up, basically playing a very passive prevent defense. And everyone's calling for a blitz. Spags, where's the blitz? Steve Spagnuolo, where's the blitz? And of course, today, Spagnuolo sends the blitz with about a minute 40 left. And Julio Jones fried Prince Mukamara down the sideline. Now, one could argue that Spags blitzed with the hopes of saying, hey, we either make a big play or surrender a big play. And if you surrender a big play, you still got time left. But unfortunately for the Giants, Julio Jones didn't make it into the end zone and was down at the two. Awkward situation. Were the Giants going to be able to stop him? Maybe he wasn't in on that third and goal. I don't know. It doesn't matter. The Giants didn't deserve to win. They didn't make the plays that were needed. Giants fans are very sour, very bitter bunch right now, especially hearing some of the hollers in the crowd, man. I mean, these Giants fans can be brutal, especially to our dear friend Preston Parker, who everyone wants to rip this guy apart. I'm just going to say I feel bad for him. He's in a bad place, dropping a lot of balls that he could catch. And it was painful to see, especially at the end of the game there with Eli's fourth and long toss, which very well could have been caught. It was a tougher catch than his other ones, but very well could have been caught. And that's a tough way to lose. But the good news is Odell Beckham looks like Odell Beckham again. Eli Manning threw 40,000, his 40,000th yard today. That's something no New York quarterback has ever done. Odell Beckham had 100 catches, had his 100th catch today. That is the fastest receiver ever to get that many catches. That, you know, he got it the fastest, I should say. And those are the minor positives. But the thing is, Giants are 0-2, looking to play the Redskins in just 4 days on Thursday Night Football. And that can be good or bad. You can be looking at a quick 0-3, and disaster could be looming. Or you could be looking at a bounce-back game against a division rival, and things could be possibly looking up. The Cowboys defeated the Eagles today in what was probably the most hideous game ever played. It was flags. The Eagles looked horrible. The Cowboys didn't even look that good either, but they won handedly. You have to give them credit. And Tony Romo broke his collarbone. He's going to be out a while. Brandon Weeden will be leading the way for the Dallas Cowboys as of right now. The Eagles are 0-2 with the Giants. The Redskins got a win today. They're 1-1. Who's going to win this division? Who's going to win this division? What does it look like? I don't know. This division is totally up in the air right now. A bounce-back win against this Washington team could mean everything for the Giants. So we can hang our heads. We can call for Tom Coughlin's head on a stick, or we can look at the positives. You can look at the positives. Everyone's saying Coughlin's job is on the line. Well, that's only the 30th time everyone's been saying that. This guy's a pretty resilient head coach. You could say the game's been dating him. You can mutter insults all you want to Coach Coughlin, but to me, this loss isn't on him. They got to execute. You can say they didn't manage the clock very well, but the defense, they're struggling up front. They surrendered big plays in the middle of the field. Landon Collins has been okay as a rookie. He's been pretty good. He hasn't really wowed anybody. Giants had an unexpected injury to Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. Jayron Hosley came in and actually filled in pretty nicely on Roddy White. Roddy White, did he even play in this game? Dude was shut down pretty well. So, you know, you really can't get too angry at the corners. The linebackers, you need John Beeson back. You need John Beeson back. But the biggest issue, obviously, is up front. And the other big issue is on the offensive side of the ball is you need Victor Cruz back. When are the Giants going to get Cruz? It's looking like possibly a week 4 return. I mean, the odds are if he's not ready to go today, he's not going to be ready to go on Thursday. You have a calf injury after sitting out preseason to prevent injury. It's a disaster. We'll see how Cruz feels in the next few days, but you can bet your money he's not going to be suiting up against the Redskins. Good news for the Giants is it's another home game, and they'll be versing Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins. You never know what to expect with this team. I don't really know, because you have the whole RG3 situation. You have an awkward quarterback and coach relationship with Jay Gruden and him. And RG3 has since been pretty much canned. I mean, he's been canned. Everything but removed from the team is what's happened to RG3. So Jay Gruden, he went with Cousins. He's got a 1-1 record. He's coming to the Giants. You don't know what you're going to expect with this team. The Giants have had their way against the Redskins in recent years. But this is an unpredictable week in the NFL. And soon enough, we're gonna call my friend Tyreek Butler, and we're gonna get his opinion on this matter. But I think a lot of people underestimate the severity of how unpredictable this week is, because no teams really have an identity yet. The Giants, they could come back and be good in a few weeks, or they could crumble. A lot of 1-1 teams, we don't know what to expect them week 3, and a lot of 2-0 teams start to get a little cocky, arrogant, think they're hot stuff, and then they get their butts whooped week 3. Who knows what to expect? But my man Tyreek is on the line. Tyreek, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, man? I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Tyreek is a student at Newhouse College in Syracuse. We were colleagues at Oneonta College. He's a huge sports guy, and I know you watched that game today, Tyreek. What are your thoughts?
Well, late game execution for the second week in a row. I know you saw the stat. The first team in NFL history to lose the first two games of the season, turning two 10-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's tough. But on the bright side, Eli Manning still has a thrown an interception. You look at what the defense is doing outside of surrendering those late game leads. Today they played pretty well against Matt Ryan and that offense up until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the play of the game is the Giants are driving. They're moving the ball, no problem to start the second half. They were winning favorably, and Eli gets down deep into Redskins territory, and it's a situation where he knows he's going to take a sack, and he fumbles the ball. Falcons get the ball, and it was a huge turnover. So, yeah, he didn't throw an interception, but that turnover was pretty huge, and he's got to tuck the ball there.
Yeah, it was a game of momentum shifts in the first – well, I believe it was the second quarter with the Falcons up 10-3. Giants had a third down deep in their own territory, and the Falcons missed a tackle. And on the very next play after that converted that first down, Odell Beckham Jr. goes into the end zone for a touchdown, tying the game. Then the Giants go ahead. That was a momentum shift. Also, that play that you just alluded to, Giants up by 10. At worst, they're going to go up 13 points. At most, you know, they'll go up by two touchdowns. So that was you know, that was a costly play.
And to me, Tyreek, it's another one of those examples when you have a close game and you can dissect every little play. And to me, it's just torturous. It's almost not worth it to dissect it that much, because when you have a close game, you really got to get over it and you got to move on. To me, this couldn't have been more well exhibited than with the Seahawks earlier this year. Obviously, the Seahawks were coming off that Super Bowl loss, a heartbreaking loss. All they needed was a yard. And Marshawn Lynch does not get the ball. Everyone complains for months and months and months. And then they're in an overtime game against the Rams where they need a yard. Marshawn Lynch does get the ball, and he's tackled for a loss. So yeah. people can speculate about how things would have gone, but you just have no idea how things should go. It's to me, it's getting crazy because the Giants last week, obviously they got a lot of heat for some pretty poor decisions late in the game, obviously. But you still don't know what happened, and I think people look for a binary concrete reason, especially in media, you know what I'm saying? Like a binary concrete reason as to why a team lost, and they want to write about that, you know, report about that, and I just don't think football works like that. I don't think there ever really is a concrete reason. You can lose a game on one play, sure, but there's 10 other plays that make that situation occur. So as a football player and as a football coach, the analogy is much different. So I think that the media, it really gets too hung up on details that turn out to be pretty minor, even if they are game deciding. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, you know, to some degree I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the times it's because of, you know, that actual play and what it leads to. So last week, the failure to, you know, execute late in the game and burn the clock led to Dallas having all that time with no timeouts and being able to corral the victory. This week, it was the same thing. The Giants' inability to capitalize on a third down. Then you have the delay of game. So these miscues. And a lot of people are looking at the fact that the Giants should be 2-0. I don't think anyone can argue that the Giants shouldn't be 2-0.
That's what hurts
right
the
now.
Most for Giants fans.
That last week, that loss against the Cowboys hurt. This week's loss hurts. Mm-hmm. Now you got a short turnaround with the Redskins on Thursday. But people are looking at the fact that this team should be 2-0, and it's just a tough way to go out.
Yeah, but the positive way to look at it in retrospect, just to take the opposite view, is you got a division that's wide open. Tony Romo broke his collarbone today, and I don't know if you saw any of that Cowboys-Eagles game, but it was pretty hideous display. I mean, I caught the end of it, and I listened to some of it on the radio, but it's everyone was saying it was a sloppy game, tons of flags. Both teams looked underprepared. I'm actually profoundly shocked at how poorly the Eagles played in that game, and I still think Mark Sanchez should be the starting quarterback for that team, but that's a second point. But to me, the division is wide open. We don't know how good the Redskins are yet either. The Redskins could very well have the best defense in this division. That's a crazy thought, right?
Yeah, that is very crazy. And like you said, it's a wide open division. I think just, you know, any fan base that is fueling their optimism on another team's, like, deficiencies, it means that you don't really have confidence in your
team.
It's
a problem.
But I do understand what you're saying in terms of the division being so wide open.
That's
Dallas
what,
losing Tony Romo and Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
You know, Philly, 0-2 so far, not looking really good.
Yeah.
RG3 and that situation in Washington, you don't know what's going on in the locker room.
Yeah.
How that negativity is going to play out. The Giants with their back-to-back weeks failing to execute. So it is a wide open division.
Those are the things that a coach will preach to their team. And obviously the Jets are playing the Indianapolis Colts tomorrow night. And the Colts are coming off an embarrassing loss to the Buffalo Bills. The Jets are coming off a win against the Browns. And what are your thoughts heading into that matchup?
Well, it's going to be tough because, you know, everyone's thinking, oh, Indianapolis struggled last week. The Jets should have, not everyone's thinking this, but the Jets should have a good time against that offensive line. The Indianapolis defense is not good at all, so you know, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, it should open up the field for those guys. But I think it's going to come down to turnovers. If the Jets start shooting themselves in the foot and giving Indianapolis extra possessions, especially with that crowd, you know, they're going to be behind Andrew Luck. They haven't looked good in their last four games going back to last season. Their last two games going back to last season.
Right.
It's going to be a fun one, I think. Right now, I would give the edge to Indianapolis because they're at home playing with Andrew Luck, but, you know, we'll see.
To me, people underestimate the – I was kind of hinting at this earlier in the show – is the team's lack of identity in the first few weeks. I don't know what to expect from this game. I personally believe that you have to give the Colts obviously a chance coming back with the comeback game because they played so poorly the week before, and the rebound game is a typical thing. But the Jets played well against the Browns. So, in other words, are the Jets as good as they looked, and are the Colts as bad as they looked? And to me, neither of them may not be the case. I mean, the Jets might be worse, and the Colts might be better. So I think you're going to get a pretty intriguing matchup. But it does favor the Jets. They are going to be able to get to Luck. But Luck, as you know, is a quick release, and they're going to pass a ton of times in the game because, you know, they're not really known for their running game. But that could either benefit the Jets or it could be a long night. And I think it'll go one way or the other. I think the Colts can either win handedly or the Jets really rattle them and show that they're a lot better.
Well, good news for the Jets. Cromartie is not hurt. Well, he did you know, suffer an injury, but everyone thought it was going to be season-ending. Reports came out that he's not hurt. I would caution, you know, the Jets maybe not to play him tomorrow because you don't want to put him in a position where he can aggravate it and it could keep him out for some time. You already have Dean Milner. He's shell for a few games. You don't want to get into issues with your secondary because that's what the team was built on this year, the defense, the secondary, and the running game. So I think what the Jets need to continue to do is run the football. To me, this is what it comes down to. The more pressure on Ryan Fitzpatrick to deliver the Jets, you know, to victory, the worse the Jets are off.
I see your point. Obviously, everyone sees Fitzpatrick as this in-game manager. And he's obviously a very smart, bright quarterback. And his flaw simply is that he's really not known for throwing the ball that deep, and he's limited as an athlete. But I wouldn't underestimate Fitzpatrick. I think he can win you some games down the stretch. He's had some good ones in the past, particularly when he was a member of the Buffalo Bills. I remember they had a good first half to a season many moons ago. I think it was the 2011 season where he was able to give them some comeback victories. So I wouldn't completely underestimate him, but obviously I completely understand what you're saying. That's not their game plan. They're going to be a run-first team all the way and rely on their defense.
But, it's similar to what it was last year. So
Exactly.
The Jets need to rely on the running game, and the defense needs to force turnovers, something they weren't able to do last year. It's going to be a good game tomorrow night. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. I really like this Todd Bowles guy. I think as a Jets fan, you have to appreciate a no-nonsense coach. After, you know, Rex Ryan, obviously, you could call it nonsense. You can call it amping up your team or whatever. But someone quiet, someone a little more professional, in my opinion. And I think Jets fans will learn to like Bowles if they don't already.
That's a good point because he's not married to this idea of, you know, starting quarterbacks returning from injuries and still having their job solidified. Mm-hmm. He came out and said, listen, Geno's starting his spot. You know, it's not for sure that when he comes back from this jaw injury that he's going to get it back. If we're winning games, as Fitzpatrick is performing, then Geno has to earn that spot back. And that's not something that Rex, you know, was of the mindset of last season. So it's a different change. It's a new change. It's a different culture. And you hope that all the nonsense is gone. You just need positivity right now because the last few seasons haven't been good for the Jets.
Right. Basically the same game plan, but with a whole new attitude. And shifting gears to baseball, the Mets are playing the Yankees. They're up 1-0 at the end of the third inning here. CC Sabathia is on the hill against Matt Harvey. And for starters, why are the Mets playing the Yankees this late in the season? Can you explain that to me? I don't understand it. It's crazy.
It doesn't make sense, but it is interesting that these two teams are playing important September games.
It's what they want.
Both teams
are
playing important September games for the first time since 2007.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. And obviously baseball loves the ratings, and, you know, that's pretty much what it is.
And obviously they're playing a night game on ESPN. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm. So.
Well, I just looking at this from an objective standpoint, I think both teams have a chance to do something in the postseason. Obviously, Yankee fans are a little bit worried about their starting pitching, and Met fans, if they're worried about anything, it's their lack of playoff experience and the fact that they've they've blown some leads like this before. A fair amount. It was a while ago, completely different roster, but it's unfortunately kind of what the Mets are known for to an extent. And they have blown a lot of division leads. But to me, the Yankees have a good chance because Girardi's been there and he's a good coach. But you've had a beef with Girardi, no?
Yes. Yeah, he's been, to me, he's not been managing well this season. I think he's managing really scared as if his job is on the line. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but his bullpen is overused. He's pulling his starting pitchers out way too soon. Friday night, the Yankees put out a triple-A lineup in a must-win game. Every game, from now on is a must-win if you have any sights of winning that division. Tanaka on the mound, opposing Steven Matz. He put out a triple-A lineup. Chris Young batting cleanup. He wouldn't even be in the lineup for most MLB teams. So, very questionable moves by Joe Girardi this season. And, I haven't been a fan of how he's managed so far.
I have to side the other way with this. I think that Joe Girardi is a good manager. I think that he's proven he can win big games. And I think that he's doing better with the Yankees than anyone expected. Obviously, going into this season, starting pitching was the issue and remains the issue. But this lineup has been unreal. Carlos Beltran has been great, in my opinion. For the Yankees, and I think he's producing the most as one of the older guys because the Yankees have a lot of older guys on their roster, but Beltran doesn't look any different than he did 4 or 5 years ago. And Girardi, I don't have a beef with Girardi. I mean, you look at that lineup on Friday night that you were talking about. They're playing a National League team. Chris Young used to be a Met. That's clearly what he's going for. Maybe he's playing a hunch. This late in the year, it's clearly risky. And would you rather see A-Rod play the field? Is that what you're suggesting?
No. Chris Young. The reason why Chris Young was playing was because he's had success against righties.
I understand that.
Girardi was going with that idea.
Yeah.
But to me, Jacoby Ellsbury has to be in the lineup. Brian McCann has to be in the lineup.
Well, he didn't play McCann because it was a day game after a night game. That was why he didn't play McCann.
I don't want to hear that this late in the season, man.
Maybe.
Honestly, you're in a pennant race right now. You need your best guys out there. John Ryan Murphy has performed well this season, but you need your best guys out there. And I think it was a huge mistake for him to send that B team out there, knowing his team needs everyone they can get at this point.
I mean, you bring up a fair point, but Girardi is not out of the norm with doing the day game for a night game situation. McCann gave the Mets
right
a hard time on that Saturday, and the Yankees did win the game on Saturday, and now we have a great game on Sunday night to determine who wins the series. But I'm not going to knock Girardi for doing something that all coaches do in the league. I understand your no-nonsense point and that the Yankees have had a hard time with the Toronto Blue Jays, and they really want to preserve that wild card spot. Or maybe, you never know, maybe win the division, but preserve that wild card spot is more realistic.
I understand. No. I understand that managers do employ that day game after a night game strategy. But I'm saying, particularly coming down the stretch with these last 2 weeks of baseball, you need your guys in the lineup. And I think that if you're going to have Ellsbury out, if you're going to have A-Rod out, you need to at least have McCann in the lineup. You can't sit all three of your players out because Mark Teixeira, he's out for the season. So you're losing that production. He was having an MVP-type season. And if you're sitting Ellsbury and A-Rod is not in the lineup, so you have those three guys not giving you any production, you need to have someone else in there.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, how do you feel about Terry Collins as a manager of the Mets? He's been the king of resting guys this late in the season. Do you view it as a different situation? Or to me, sometimes it makes me scratch my head.
It's a different situation to me because tonight the Mets have a 6.5 game lead in their division.
Right.
I think it's different because they have a little more leverage. They have a little more, wiggle room in terms of making mistakes, if you want to, deem that to be a mistake.
I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I guess DeGrom has struggled, but they recently announced they're going to skip Jacob DeGrom's next start. And I think it's too passive, too wishy-washy. I mean, it's kind of exactly what you're saying about Joe Girardi. I don't think the Mets have any wiggle room, excuse me. They're in a situation that they haven't been in years. They need to make the playoffs. This fan base needs to see that. After this many agonizing years, they're very hungry fans, and they need to do whatever they can to run away with this division. They don't want to hold it and just make it and just squeak by in the playoffs when everyone rested. No, they got to take the momentum and just keep it going, in my opinion.
No, I understand that. I'm not saying – well, what I was basically comparing was the two situations. I'm saying the Mets are in a better situation right now than the Yankees are, because they are in first place by 6.5 games. The Yankees trail by 3.5 games, so that's what I'm saying.
Right, right. Cespedes is in a bit of a funk lately. Unfortunately, don't have his lineup just as stats right now for tonight. He's 0-2 with a strikeout so far.
He's like over his last 20 now.
Yeah, he's got to get it going. It's unbelievable to think that we're already gonna criticize Cespedes for the ridiculous numbers he had just a few nights ago. But he's in a funk and he's got to find it quickly. The Mets have no time.
One concern for the Mets is how they played against the better teams in the league. When you look at their record against the Cubs, the Pirates, and the Cardinals, they're only 3-17,
yes,
including being swept 4 times. Coming into tonight's game, they're 2-3 against the Yankees. I believe they're 2-2 against the Blue Jays as well.
Yeah, so they're not as good against
the Mets are playing. They're not going to be playing against the Phillies and the Braves and the Marlins and the Rockies in the playoffs. They're going to have to bring this, you know, their A game.
Well, and they are going to be playing more than likely against the Dodgers in the playoffs. You never know what will happen, but they've done well against the Dodgers. They fared pretty well this season. So to me, matchups, you can think about it all you want. Obviously, the Mets, you have a good point. They haven't exactly played tough competition in the NL East. But to me, once you're in the dance, it's a series. You have no idea what's going to happen, especially if the Mets are able to get a favorable matchup against the Dodgers and somehow win that. Then you're in the NLCS. I mean, at that point, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You got to beat the best if you want to be the best. So I understand you just want to. You're not sure they'd be good enough to do it. But I think the drama of the situation sort of warrants more competitiveness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's a different stage. You know, you're talking about the regular season versus the postseason. The Mets going with their 4 best starters against the 4 best starters of the other team. So I understand what you're saying, but I'm just concerned. You know, if they're able to play against those elite teams and perform well. Right now, I picked them to beat the Dodgers and go to the NLCS, but obviously there's a lot of baseball to be played, and we'll just have to wait because it is a short series and anything can happen, like you said.
All right, Tyreek, I'm going to let you go soon. We're going to get Peter Schwartz on the phone very soon, but real quick, the Sunday Night Football, the Packers are up 10-3 to the Seattle Seahawks. I believe you're very high on the Packers. I know you're a huge Aaron Rodgers fan. Do you think this game, because it's being hyped as so, is the only reason I'm really asking, do you think this game has any allusion to another NFC showdown? Like last year, late in the year, these teams will be seeing each other again, you think?
I think I'm going to use one of your lines. There's a lot of football to be played.
Absolutely. You hate when I say that, so I think it's funny that you're saying it.
I'm just going to borrow it from you for a second, but what's interesting to me is this Cam Chancellor situation, because the Seahawks don't look anything like that defense we saw 2 years ago, not even the defense we saw last year.
Just pay the man.
If they continue to struggle this way, we might see Arizona take that division. I know it is early, but that team looks really good right now. But Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, that's my favorite to go to the Super Bowl.
Arizona, it all depends on Carson Palmer, the man with 2 ACL surgeries. Again, can the guy stay
on the
field?
Healthy.
Yeah, exactly. Larry Fitzgerald's a completely different guy with Carson at the helm.
For the Packers, I'm looking for Eddie Lacy to have a pretty good season. Again, like his first year when he won the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, you know what he's going to give you. And the defense surprised a lot of people in the NFC Championship game. Really surprised a lot of people. You know what the offense is capable of. James Jones.
He's
looking
yes.
like Jordy Nelson.
James Jones. Another touchdown
he's looking
tonight.
Like Jordy Nelson, but I'm really high on the Packers this year, like you said. And barring any significant injuries, I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl.
All right, Tyreek. Thanks for your prediction and for your time. It was great to hear from you, as it always is. Have a good night, buddy.
No problem, man. Good luck on the show.
Thanks, man. Of course, I was groaning to James Jones. I was groaning to James Jones because the Giants elected to cut him, and Preston Parker has looked like a pretty lousy replacement. We're going to go to Peter Schwartz soon. But first off, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Sports Talk 1240. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Joining us, he's an anchor for CBS Sports Radio. He's a writer for WFAN as well as USA Football. Peter Schwartz, ladies and gentlemen. Peter, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
No problem.
Well, Peter, for starters, I know you're a big Islanders guy, so I have to ask you, have you seen the Islanders' new jerseys?
Yeah, I actually like the Islanders' new jerseys.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Well, I actually saw the leaked photo of it a couple of weeks ago when it was just kind of like hanging on some cheap-looking hanger. I honestly thought it was disgusting. I showed it to my 9-year-old son, and he felt the same way.
Yes.
And he's a pretty good barometer because he's the target audience they're trying to hit with that, and he didn't like it. So I said, well, you know what, let's wait and see what happens when they show the whole thing and they put the patches on it and everything. And then the other day when I saw the announcement, we saw the Tavares pictures and everything, I kind of took a look at it, again, and it didn't really look, that bad to me when they had numbers and a name and you saw it in motion and everything.
All right.
And the day went on, I kept looking at it, and I'm like, you know what? It really is a sharp-looking jersey. So, yeah, at first I really admit that I hated it. I kind of got used to it and saw it. And it really, all the details added to it kind of opened it up for me, and I do kind of like it, and my son likes it too, so he's going to have to get one.
I'll definitely take your word for it. I just personally have a difficult time understanding that our Islanders jerseys are somewhat related to a Jay-Z Black album, because obviously that's where the Brooklyn Nets got their colors to begin with.
I said this, when they went to the Fisherman jersey years ago, they got ridiculed. I didn't like those either. But to me, I don't care what color uniform they're wearing. It could be pink, purple, whatever. As long as they, that's the bottom line. And all the other stuff is all superfluous nonsense. So they can wear black, they can wear pink, blue, whatever. If they win, I'll be fine with that. Whatever winning combination is fine with me.
I believe that is a pretty fair point. But you recently wrote an article for The Fan on a possible return to the Coliseum for the Islanders someday. But to me, I see that as a pretty difficult thing for the Islanders, especially if they're going to make more revenue in Brooklyn, which I think everyone is anticipating. Can you speculate on what you think might happen?
I think it's really hard to speculate now before they've even played one booklet. But the article that I wrote that you're referring to was a conversation that I had with Nassau County Executive Ed Mangano a couple weeks ago. And the funny part, that story was not supposed to be about the Islanders returning. That story was designed to be a story about the new Nassau Coliseum and the events that are going to be there, with a little touch on the Islanders still maintaining a foothold in the county by playing a few games a year at the new place, and them also continuing to practice on Long Island. But once he started talking about his feelings about them coming back, well, that's what kind of changed the tone of the story. And that wasn't the first time that he said that. He has said that on a couple other occasions.
Yeah.
That he feels they're going to come back. So, but that was really, those when he spoke to me and I followed up with some other questions, was the most expansive he's been on that. And here are the key things that would lead you to believe that they could come back someday. First of all, the new building is only going to seat 13,000 seats, but both Mangano in my story and in previous interviews, as well as Bruce Ratner, who built the Barclay Center and is building a new Coliseum, they've both been on record by saying that the Coliseum could go back to 16,000 seats if they need to. That's one thing. And the other thing, too, is, that this reported, 5-year out clause that they supposedly have with the Barclay Center, and also apparently what the Barclay Center has with them. So, and there's a lot of people that seem to think that it's not going to work there, that it's not going to work. The players shuttling back and forth from Long Island to Brooklyn for games, the issues that the building has as far as hockey goes for fans, the obstructive view seat, the scoreboard hanging over the blue line. So even before they drop the puck, there are a number of potential issues down the road. But the Islanders have a very lucrative contract with Barclay Center that guarantees them X number of dollars each year. And like you said, the excessive revenues, the fact that people are talking about the new jerseys, the fact that they sold 8,000 season tickets there, I think it's kind of early to speculate as to what their future will be. But I think it'll be interesting to see how the arena looks for hockey this year, how the Islanders play there, how it feels. But right now, it's way too early to even speculate on that.
Right. I mean, that's all true. And that's really interesting. I didn't realize that you had a different intent when you started writing that article. But what I worry about, Peter, is it's another New York sports team with a new venue. And I was at the Giants game today, and it's just different. The fans are different. I sit pretty high up, and you still get a lot of personality from the fans there. But if you ever have a chance to sit further down at the new MetLife Stadium, it's just a different crowd. I mean, a lot of people there aren't even really football fans. They're just going for doing something or going on business trips, business parties or whatever you want to call it. And I'm worried that fate is going to be the same with the Islanders, especially with a changing area like Brooklyn. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I do. I totally agree with you, especially about MetLife Stadium. I've been there, a bunch of times, mainly as a reporter until a couple of years ago when I stopped covering the Jets. My family there, a few times. I'm not a big fan of MetLife Stadium. I like Giant Stadium a whole lot. But even as a Jets fan, prefer the Jets have their own stadium. But I like Giant Stadium a lot. I don't like the new place. It's too big. It doesn't feel like it's a very big home field advantage. And you're right. That could be the situation at Barclay Center. Although, if you've been to the Barclay Center before, it's a big place, but it also has, kind of an intimidating, intimate feel. The seats, are steep. The sound comes dulling down on the floor. It's a good sports venue, but listen, the fans showing up at games now. You're right. The whole these tickets are so expensive now to take people to games, and it's very expensive, and that goes to all the venues, in the area now. I think the best, venue now that still has somewhat of decent value is a Mets game at Citi Field because
completely agree.
It still feels like a family atmosphere. But from the Islander standpoint, I think you're going to see these games kind of split. I think your midweek games are going to be very corporate since it's going to be hard to get to for Long Island fans.
Yeah.
Even with train, it's going to be difficult. So you're going to see a lot of people from Brooklyn and a lot of people from the city. I think a lot of the normal, not the normal, but a lot of the core fans that are from Long Island, I think you're only going to see them venture out on the weekends because it's just going to be very, very difficult to commute from Long Island to Brooklyn during the week.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with everything you're saying, especially the part about Citi Field. Funny enough, today I was with my dad at the Giants game, and it was a tough one, but we ran into this guy wearing a Mel Hine jersey, and it was a really older-looking gentleman. After talking to him, it seemed like he might have been about 90, and he was sitting higher up with us. I mean, obviously, we're going to the game as fans, and he told us you know, we asked him, obviously he's been to like every Giants venue imaginable, and he told us about how he used to be a season ticket holder. He's not anymore because he couldn't afford the lease, which is probably the most evil thing about these giant, new stadiums, these huge ones. They ask for a lease for season ticket holders. So he, as an older guy, complains to John Mara, sends him a letter, and he told us this whole story. He's outside doing yard work one day, when his wife picks up the phone and says, honey, you got a phone call. And he goes, oh, just take a message. You might not want to. And it was John Mara himself calling the house of the gentleman to not only explain why he had to have the lease, but to somewhat apologize, and obviously a very political answer because, you know, they have to make their money. They want to be that newer venue. But just I just thought you might find that story interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's been a few stories like that, and it's unfortunate that Belleye Stadium was built that way. You know, for the Jets, the whole upper deck is non-PSL, so you don't have to have a PSL on the upper deck for Jets games. But I just don't like the whole concept of the whole thing and gouging the fans. Listen, if the Jets and Giants built that stadium to be a moneymaker, they didn't. I don't think they needed to do that If they needed to do that to build a stadium, they could have just stayed with Giant Stadium. It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. I just don't care for the place. I think when you look, and I've been to some of these other brand new venues. I've been to Dallas. I've been to Indianapolis. These places were around the same cost as MetLife Stadium, and they're much nicer. Indianapolis is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Dallas Stadium is phenomenal. Philadelphia for an outdoor venue is great. New England built a beautiful new stadium, and Pittsburgh did. I just don't know what they were thinking when they built that life. It's not a great place technologically. It's great with the video boards and what they have as far as the fan experience, but just visually and aesthetically as a football venue, I just don't like it.
I'm completely with you, Peter. But also, besides writing for The Fan, I know you also write for USA Football. And just for those that don't know, I'm sure a lot of NFL fans have seen those commercials, but it's not exactly too informative. I was wondering, maybe you can explain for the folks that don't know what that is.
Well, USA Football is the governing body of football, football in the United States, from Pee Wee levels all the way up to high school. And really what they are, it's the organization that promotes the sport of football. It teaches and provides lessons for coaches, mainly in terms of tackling, but really an overall kind of guide for parents and coaches on how to learn about the game of football, how to teach the game of football, and they work with their partners to promote safety as far as the equipment goes. And you know, my blog for them deals on issues surrounding parents and behavior and that type of thing. But as an organization, really what they do is they promote the sport of football, and mainly as an educational tool from peewees up through high school.
Right. I saw your article about dealing with having your kids deal with losses, how you help them. I thought it was very well done. No problem. What made you want to write for them? Is it because you have children playing football, or?
Well, yeah, my older son Bradley is 9. He plays football. My little one plays soccer.
Okay.
He's been playing football for 5 years now, and you know, my wife and I have been through the ringer on all these issues surrounding youth sports, and not just the football, but you know, him playing baseball and other sports as well. So just sort of, it's really fascinating from a football standpoint to kind of go through the emotions of that and see what people say. Oh, I'm going to let my kid play football. And I just felt that with my experience, not only as a sports reporter, but also as a youth football parent, I kind of, you know, I contacted USA Football about doing a blog, and you know, that was a number of months ago. So it's been fun doing that. It's been interesting sharing those experiences, and there's other parents that do blogs for USA Football as well. They touch on some different aspects, but I just think it's important for especially new parents that get involved every week to kind of learn from other people's experiences, and that's what I try to do with that blog.
Right, right. And Peter, the theme, sort of the theme of tonight's radio show to me has been overreaction, and I can't help but notice that in regards to the last week's debacle with the Giants against the Cowboys, obviously the Giants botched the ending of the game. But to me, it reminded me of what happened to Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl last season. In both cases, surrounding NFL media deemed the teams respective non-run decisions as to why they lost. You know? And to me, that football is not a definitive thing. To me, you can't have that definitive of a stance for something like that. What are your thoughts on the media surrounding instances like this? Are they blowing up one situation too much? Because to me, there's so many variables to a football game that bring up situations like that that it's almost foolish to get too hung up on something that particular. And as someone who's in media, I would just want your opinion.
Yeah, it's an interesting question and a good one. I kind of look at it, Anthony, from both perspectives as well. Like you, as a fan, I'm a Jets fan.
Right.
And as a member of the media and someone like myself who covered the Jets for a number of years, when a situation like that happens, obviously the first emotional response are from the fan. You're angry, ticked off, shouldn't have lost the game.
Yes.
Why did the ball, all those things. And, you know, the first line of defense is the media, because they're the ones who are going to go in the locker room afterward, and they're going to talk to Tom Coughlin, they're going to talk to Eli, they're going to talk to Brandon Jennings. You know, why did this happen? What happened? What was the thinking? First day or so, I think it's warranted. I think when you're a reporter and you're following a team, and that's the big story, how the Giants blew that game, and there were times where I covered Jet games that, you know, not exactly the same, but, you know, when a situation happens, you have to cover it. You have to get reaction. And there's this media access 24 hours later, you know, after everybody's looked at the video of the game. But I think there was a problem, not so much with the fans, because the fans, listen, you're emotional. You know, if that was me as a Giants fan, I'd be livid. I'd be seething for a week.
Yes, I still am.
But I think Sports Talk Radio, too, you know, it's an outlet for the fans to constantly talk about it. You know, if the fans didn't want to talk about it during the week, you know, the host would have nothing to talk about, whether it's on the fan or ESPN or whatever. But I do think there's this aspect of the everyday people that, and I hate using this term, but I'm going to use it anyway because they're beat people, but they tend to beat a dead horse over
yes.
a sudden. And they don't want to let it go. You know, they'll ask a player a question about something, he'll answer it, and they'll try to ask the question five or six different ways to try and get a different response, and it kind of just makes for a lingering story that doesn't need to be there. And I think it's warranted that the Giants got criticized, they botched the end of that game, and the fans had a right to be ticked off and everything. I think the reporters have that 24-hour rule. You know what? The next day, get the reaction. But as you saw, that didn't stop with Monday. It lingered into Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday before really people started talking about the Falcon game. So while I think the fans are warranted in feeling the way that they did, and the media sometimes has to try and let go of things.
I know. And with the Seahawks, it lasted months because it was the Super Bowl and it was a yard. I understand you're going to get an even grander reaction because it's such a huge stage. But how many times are they going to have to hear about this before they get to play football? I actually felt bad for them. I did.
You know what, Anthony, as a Jet fan, I'd give my left arm to see the Jets win the Super Bowl and get back to the Super Bowl the following year again. So I can understand you know, how you feel about that. It was a reaction to the whole thing. You know what? You know what? It happened. They were there. They're all human. You know, the coaching staff made a mistake. At some point, you got to turn the page. And I think to a certain extent, after a few weeks, it did. But you know what? Once the Seahawks gather for a mini camp and everything, everything reverted back to that last play. Even people that weren't on the team, they had to go up and ask them about, hey, you're joining a team that's coming off a...
Yeah, Jimmy Graham.
For a loss. Mm-hmm. You know, what does Graham have to do with that?
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. I think sometimes, you know what, and listen, it's a... I don't want people to think it's like, you know, being a teacher or being a cop or a firefighter, but there's an aspect to sports reporting that is a real tough job in dealing with it every single day. But you know what? Sometimes you got to let these controversial things go a little bit. I almost, as a sports fan, rather hear a positive story about a guy on the team that is doing this or doing that as opposed to kind of just harping on all the negative things that go on.
Yeah, I totally understand that, and I totally get that. Thank you so much, Peter, for coming on. I'm going to ask you one quick question before you go, just because you're a Jets fan. Obviously, they're playing tomorrow night against the Colts. Colts coming off a big loss against Buffalo. What are your thoughts on the game?
I have usually, as a fan and when I cover the team too, I can get a pretty good feel of what to expect from week to week. There are these oddball weeks where you just don't know. And I have to be honest with you, I just don't have a feel on what to expect tomorrow night. You know, I felt coming into the season, and I don't know how you felt about the Colts, Anthony. Kind of overrated coming into the season. I love Andrew Luck.
Completely agree about overrated, actually. Completely agree. Sorry to interrupt.
I don't like what they did around him. I don't like the aging players that they put around him. Their offensive line is very weak. I'm not a big fan of their defense. So I think given that, I think the Jets have a chance tomorrow to score some points. But again, like we've seen, you know, with the way this team is shaped up, you know, it's going to come down to the quarterback play. You know, if Patrick can play, basically, you know, mistake-free, kind of like what he did against the Browns last week, I think the Jets have a pretty good chance to score some points tomorrow night. But I think the bigger key is can this really be the coming out party for this Jets defense against a really good quarterback? Because even though I don't like what they built around him, they you know, he's got a chance to come up with a scoring play just about anywhere on the field. And that's the one thing I worry about tomorrow night is that if the Jets get Blitz happy, does he find if T.Y. Hilton plays, does T.Y. Hilton try to crack down the middle and catch a long pass? Do the Jets get stymied by a draw play to the running back? That's what I worry about tomorrow night. But I do think the Jets have a pretty good chance of going in there and coming away with a win tomorrow night.
All right. You heard it from Peter Schwartz. Peter, thank you so much for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure. Really appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
All right. Thank you. I hope to hear from you soon. Take care. All right. That was Peter Schwartz, ladies and gentlemen. He was kind enough to be in on the show while he was driving on his way to work. So thanks again to Peter. The Mets are still up 1-0. We're in the bottom of the fifth, the Mets against the Yankees. Update on the football game. Let's take a look here. 10-3 still Packers. Looks like more of a defensive game than maybe people would have anticipated, especially for Green Bay, holding the Seahawks to 3 points. That's interesting. Well, before I sign off, I have a little bit of a rant set up. So obviously I have 5 minutes, so I'm going to try and not get too emotional and go on a babble here. But I think everyone and their mother has complained about the NFL punishments, the NFL policies. What are they supposed to do? What's the right thing to do? Obviously, a lot of that was surrounding Brady and the Deflategate. A lot of that was surrounding Adrian Peterson's return to the field. And to me, those are two obviously different incidents. One of them occurred, or at least possibly, allegedly, whatever stupid word you want to use, occurred on the field, and one of them occurred off the field. And I'm kind of not agreeing with anyone here, but I think that incidents that occur off the field, the NFL should just stay out of and let the legal system take care of it. In the case of Ray Rice a year ago, that angered people because obviously there's footage of him hitting his fiance, and he got in some legal trouble. But his wife did end up marrying him after that and dropping the charges. So as far as the law's concerned, the guy was clean as a whistle, and he didn't even play a snap for the entire season just because of the bad PR that he gave the Baltimore Ravens. And I just don't see it as the NFL's responsibility to have to sugarcoat this great big image. Of course, they're part of a plan. They're part of a $25 billion plan. The NFL is a $9 billion organization trying to make $25 billion. That's their plan. So of course things are going to get crazy. Of course you're going to see draft day and fan rag and fantasy football this and fantasy football that and advertisements everywhere. But it's clearly negatively impacting the game. I've never seen more stoppage in play. I've never seen more flags thrown. And everyone is just under this impression that the NFL is providing this glorious, beautiful cultural image. And truthfully, it should just be about football. If they simplify the whole thing, obviously they're not going to make as much money. But from the true fans, in my opinion, that's the impression they should get. I really have a hard time understanding it. Like I was saying to Peter early in the show, I'm at the Giants game today. You got fans that don't even care. They're there to check their fantasy football team. They're paying money. You got fans getting loaded off expensive beer, mind you. It's ridiculous. So to me, my final message that I'm going to provide for everybody tonight on Sports Talk 1240 is let's try and appreciate the football. Let's try and bring back the football. Because obviously the game's changed, and a lot of people are frustrated with that. But don't let all the fluff, all the negativity surrounding players off the field issues, or did Brady cheat, did Brady this, or the media superstorms over one play, don't let that take away what is supposed to be a good tradition about fathers and sons and mothers and daughters or whoever. Anyone, it's a bonding experience. It's someone that inspired you to watch something and partake in something culturally. For me, obviously, it's my father. Before that, it was my grandfather and my uncles, and it's had a huge impact on my life, and I won't let anything take that away. Thanks for listening. This was Sports Talk 1240. I'm Anthony Beers. Till next time, everybody. Thanks again.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.